Okay, I just was just informed that we were unfortunately on mute for a portion of the beginning of the committee meeting, so anyone online was not able to hear the beginning of the agenda, which included public comments. So I believe we have some people on the line that would like to make some public comments. So I'd like to make a friendly amendment that we open up public comments again, and then we'll go back into item number 6A. So if there are no objections, I will go back into public comment. Seeing no objections, let's open up public comment again.
For members of the public who wish to make a comment, please press star 9 on your telephone. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please remember to state your name and affiliation, if any, for the record.
Good morning. This is Ken Kastner. If you look in your minutes, you'll see this happened at the last meeting of the Budget Audit Committee, where we just didn't get connected in time. And I'm sorry, Mr. Weissner, for interrupting your excellent presentation on ADA. The only thing I would add to that is that ADA funds allow for some decisions that may carry different sorts of policy or risk considerations that would otherwise need to be looked at for the, you know, a permanent fund investment. So I always appreciated the differentiation between the two. I wanted to thank you for having the risk management policy before you, also for the backup material that you have. There's an excellent chart showing some of the collateral policies, but they're generalized, and state law and your own policy require you to do that on an individual basis as well. The appraisals for each individual company need to be known to the public. The ability to meet their obligations need to be known to the public on an individual basis as well. And, of course, I'm going to mention that that your policy on confidentiality is not severable from the Open Meetings Act, which requires a fairly comprehensive disclosure of what it is that you're going to talk about in executive session, and keeping in mind that most of what you talk about should be done in open session. So thank you for reopening public comment, and that for me.
Thank you for your comment. Is there anyone else on the line that would like to make a public comment? All right. We're going to close public comment and go back to 6A. I apologize for interrupting you, Mr. Weissner. Please continue with your background on the loan participation program.
To the Chair of the Board and to Mr. Kastner calling in, no worries. It's good that we get the comments coming across.
Yeah.
So what I was addressing ultimately was the fact that we do not compete under the loan participation program, and what I was looking to highlight is the fact that through some of the work that I really have to highlight, Morgan Neff and Tiffany Jansen have been doing in going through all of our portfolio and really being able to identify the data that we have, is that by commercial office space within the state, ADA's portfolio only represents effectively 8%. And that's measuring really broadly what's been publicized for the principal markets of Anchorage and Fairbanks. But broadly across the state, the program has investments and works with financial parties across the state of Alaska. We have less than 10% of the commercial office space. So again, highlighting just in what's been financed and developed within the state itself, the loan participation program really is directing towards these smaller businesses that don't have access to larger capital. And then the alternative side, and I would highlight what Mr. Kastner highlighted himself, is the element of if there's a larger financing that's in place, like a hotel, like some other large office building, in some cases, the underwriting originating bank does not want to have a larger exposure. ADA will do up to $25 million under this program. And so we've seen ourselves being requested to review and analyze those types of borrowings as well and providing long-term fixed rate capital for that. So that's a component that does need to come into the review of the risk mitigation policy. And you'll see that in the memorandum itself and also with the chart that was referenced. In fact, it's trying to show how it scales down into the assumed level of portfolio at $500 million. Now, we currently have $422.5 million, but we do anticipate that there's growth that's within this portfolio and looking to establish initial risk mitigation at that $500 million level. The other element that I would highlight with competition is that we also look at two of the largest participants within the bank, or within the, as an originating bank for the loan participation program, is FMBA and Northrim. And each of them publish public financial information. And within that, you'll see that their loan portfolios for commercial real estate have grown over the last 5 years. ADA's program itself has grown from a level of around approximately $350 million to now the $422.5. So we've ourselves have seen growth, but there's been a larger growth that's been within FMBA and Northrim. So we highlight that to illustrate again that the program itself does not compete. It fills a very specific niche within the state and has been heavily utilized by borrowers for that specific niche. Having said that, and really defining, you know, the basis and the purpose ultimately of the program, I would ask Morgan if you could talk about some of the specifics that we're looking at in the way that we're going to be measuring the risk mitigation for individual loans and in the broader portfolio.
Absolutely. Chair, committee, good morning. And I also encourage Ms. Jansen to step in and comment where she feels is applicable. I think it's important to also define what is addressable from a risk standpoint within the loan participation portfolio. As everyone knows, the portfolio is programmatically defined based on our statutes and underlying missions. So there are certain risks that that are unavoidable that most would be able to address in an underlying portfolio. A couple of those are liquidity risk. That is our ability to, you know, sell a given, you know, a loan at a given time without incurring loss. Well, we're not in the market of selling these loans or trading these loans, so that is a risk that is going to be and continue to be embedded within the portfolio. The other is the market risk, and what I mean by market risk is we are investing in Alaska for Alaskans, and therefore we do not have the ability, nor do we want the ability, to diversify our portfolio outside of Alaska. So those are two very defined risks that are going to continue to be embedded within this portfolio, but ultimately can help drive other risk portfolio and measurement policies for the loan participation on a go-forward basis. One of the originating ideas and proposals that we're talking about today is in order to establish certain risk management policies, we need to really decide what the framework of that portfolio is. The portfolio, as you've seen over the last 30 years and even over the last 5 years, it's grown 35%. We need to have the ability for that portfolio to grow because we are continuing to see free flights come in and the ability for us to incur additional loan participation portfolios and to add to the total portfolio balance. So in order to set proper risk parameters, we need to set a portfolio value. And what we're looking at is setting the portfolio value at $500 million today with the ability to have quarterly loan participation allocation updates and revisits of what that portfolio value is. So if we are coming into a quarter and we look like we're ahead of our growth schedule and it looks like we're coming up to $500 million, we would the board or the staff would end up proposing to increase that allocation amount and then setting those risk parameters based on the underlying percentages at that point. Again, it's a way for us to establish very stringent and procedural-based risk measurement policies that are not unlike what Tiffany has designed and has increased during her tenure at ADA, and hopefully to enhance the availability and broadness that the loan participation portfolio can accomplish throughout borrowers throughout all of Alaska.
If I may, this is Alan Weiser. If I may add something for perspective to the BIS committee members and also for the public, is that this is the first time that ADA has undertaken this kind of analysis. So we have grown the portfolio. We have really work with the underlying originating banks, but there hasn't been an allocation internally. We have broadly talked about this when it comes time for the analysis of our available capital when we do the analysis for our dividend. So there has been robust conversation on that amount, so what capital is required for the coming years. But there hasn't been a very specific allocation related to the program. And I think that this is a very positive step that's been brought on with the discussions with the BAS.
Thank you. I wanted to ask something. This is Kristen Jansen, Commercial Finance Director for the Loan Participation Program. As the chair was alluding to earlier, this one of the original ideas that spawned this was the number of modifications that we experienced in certain industries over the last couple of years and how certain loans had been modified several times when they were in a particular industry. So one of the first things that we looked at before designing the portfolio allocation or different measures of percentage for industry was recategorizing the loan participation portfolio by repayment industry, which is something that's not been done before. We have looked at NAICS, which is a national, federal, state industry code for how the business reports for taxes. We have looked at collateral type, but we have never looked at where the actual payment is coming from to make this loan. So we do have a lot of investor loans that are tenant occupied, in which case that your business's industry would not coincide with the actual repayment industry that is making that payment. So that, I think, is a critical piece of this, that we are actually trying to fundamentally get at the industry that is making the payment, thereby making these risk mitigation measures the most concrete that they can.
Thank you. Chair, and so the way we've identified certain levels in certain areas of where we want to help define and risk the risk mitigation program is through the borrower, through the industry, and then through our pre-flight screening process. The borrower concentration is just a limit, you know, the individual borrower as itself. We already have a $25 million limitation on the amount that an underlying loan participation can be funded. We are proposing that we also limit that same level, which would be 5% of the $500 million portfolio, to the underlying borrower as well for limitations. So a borrower can't represent more than 5% of the underlying portfolio, cannot exceed the $25 million that we have currently as the cap on the individual investment. The next would be industry concentration, and I'm going to go into the first half, and then I'd like Tiffany to talk a little bit about what happens if you bump into a limitation there in the course of our review. We're wanting to limit each industry by a total of 25% of the underlying capital allocation portfolio of $500 million. But there'd be a secondary level where the top five industries are less than 50%. The reason why that's important is you just don't want to have four industries that equal 100%. You want to be able to have continued adequate diversification throughout the portfolio, so you would have to be able to measure that and be able to invest alongside that in order to keep the top five sectors underneath that 50% threshold. However, in the course of a review process, we may come up to a situation where we want to approve the loan, but because we have this cap, we want the ability to be able to address it or potentially address it further down the road, and I'd like Tiffany to address that that parameter there.
Sorry, you said the top four or top five?
Top five.
Okay.
This is Tiffany Jansen, Commercial Finance Director again. Like Morgan was just talking about there, I didn't, when we designed this, we wanted to make sure that we looked at the fact that these are going to be moving numbers, right? It's a dynamic process. The portfolio goes up, goes down. Those industries are going to change. We didn't want to put borrowers at a disadvantage if they were applying at a time when a industry might be nearer at its cap. So we did put a little caveat in here for conditional approval under industry concentration on page 4, which may allow the authority at its discretion for a conditional approval of a proposed loan. Again, the commitment would not exceed our normal commitment time of 6 months, so that is something that we already have in place. While in the six-month window, if the industry concentration changes to the point that this loan can then proceed, we would be able to proceed without further delay. So it'll go through the same process the same approval process, the investment committee or the board, depending on the amount of the loan and the amount of the aggregate exposure, but then it would be issued a conditional approval pending that the industry concentration drops to a point at which it can go through, and if that's the case, it will proceed through just as normal. So this allows us not to have to tell a borrower no. It allows us to look at the projects, evaluate them on that case-by-case basis as they are now, and then kind of keep that in our back pocket as a conditional approval, hoping that that industry concentration does adjust itself. So I think this is also another critical piece so that we are not putting borrowers at a disadvantage in the future.
And then the last is adding the materiality threshold within the pre-flight management screen process of the loan participation review. And Tiffany, would you spend a couple of minutes and talk a little bit about how important the pre-flight process is, not only to ADA, but also to our participating financial partners?
Sure, thank you. So the pre-flight process is pretty unique with this program. It's not something you often see elsewhere. We're usually talking about larger loans, and before a borrower wants to commit financially to a loan, to getting it through the application process, which might mean in an environmental phase one, which can be a significant cost, and a full appraisal, which can also be a significant cost. So often our lenders, and in this case we require it, they submit what's called a pre-flight. It's a one-page form. We've kind of redesigned since I've been here to include some more pertinent information for the project. But they submit that to see if ADA has an appetite for this type of loan. It is not an approval of any kind, but it does give them some sort of reasonable expectation that ADA would be interested in this type of project. ADA does not see the actual numbers beyond stated what's in there, so it didn't verify anything. But it does give us a pipeline, of, if you will, of what's going to come through ADA in the near future, what's going on in the area, and then also gives the lenders and the borrowers a reasonable expectation, okay, this project looks like something ADA might be interested in the future. So I do believe it's, again, another one of those critical pieces to keep in the program. But because we are seeing, as Alan has alluded to and Morgan as well, some larger pre-flights come through the process, we wanted to put something in place where those can have a little bit more scrutiny on them, since the lenders and the borrowers are relying on them for that reasonable expectation, and so that there aren't more surprises than there needs to be for this process. So I'll let Morgan kind of talk about how we came up with the allocation, what that goes forth against the portfolio amount.
So as one can imagine, the larger a pre-flight or proposed loan coming in, the more effect and weighting it will have on the underlying risk tolerances. And that is all taken into effect during the underwriting process, during the investment committee. But we want to also be able to get more documentation, as Tiffany was saying, and have it a little bit more of a baked process on loans that we consider are over a materiality threshold. And what we're proposing is establishing a 2% of the capital allocation in the loan participation portfolio materiality threshold. So in this instance, it would be 2% of $500 million. So any pre-flight that would come through the Commercial Finance Department's loan participation program that equal or exceeded $10 million would need to also include essentially an underwriting package that was that didn't include the final appraisal or environmental. It would then go through our normal process as if it was a loan that was in excess of $3 million, which would go through the investment committee process, and then it would be proposed, if determined by the investment committee, to the board for review. And then once, if the board reviewed it and was willing to move forward with it, we would then let the bank know that we need to move forward with the final appraisal and the environmental, and it was subject to those conditions precedent.
So, Morgan, are you saying that loans under $3 million now will have an underwriting process?
All loans have always had an underwriting process.
Okay. Yeah. What are you determining about 2%?
So 2% is when we first get the loan participation indication of interest from a bank. If the loan coming in is greater than $10 million on the pre-flight, as what Tiffany was mentioning, then we would then ask them to provide an underwriting package that included everything but a final appraisal and environmental. That way, we have the ability to go through it internally as well as present it to the board, and the board be able to approve or deny, and if it's approved, subject to satisfaction of, you know, appraisal and environmental reports.
It does mean, again, this is Alan Weissman, it does mean that that would be, for these loans, that would be twice that the board would look at them. Similar to the way that we do with our development project finance, where if we're talking with a entity on a larger development, they usually come in twice. They come in to present the loan to the board, so you're aware we were able to address certain questions that get raised at that point in time and the way that we're looking at putting the finance plan together. And then it comes for a final approval, you know, to go forward on an underwriting. So this would be a two-step process for the larger loan participation request.
And so today's process, just walking you through that for a loan that is greater than, or $10 million or greater.
Sure.
Let me take that. So right now, we still have the pre-flight process in place. When it is a pre-flight loan value that would need to go to the board, I do present it with to Alan, the executive director, along with chief investment officer. And so we do talk about it in that level, and then we decide what we would like for certain conditions to be back on that pre-flight. So that is the process right now. So there isn't a pre-underwriting in place. It is just the form and what is listed on there. So just stated things.
Okay. So tell me how that's different from what you're proposing.
So what we're proposing is essentially what in the private sector they would do for any commercial loan that comes in. They would do a full financial underwriting. And what they would say is, okay, the numbers work. If our anticipated value is this, then this will be our debt service coverage ratio and it should work. But they don't have the final valuation yet and they haven't done the final environmental. So typically they will present it to their boards pending a conditional approval, pending those conditions that the final valuation comes back and is clean and the environmental comes clean. So that's what we're asking on our side. And what that allows is that the project can go through the process. The borrower can get the acknowledgement that the project has a high likelihood of completion. However, again, it's not a full approval, and that allows the borrower to feel more comfortable in spending the $1,000 required to get the full appraisal and the full environmental.
And when in the process would you do a site visit?
So we could do it at the time that we do the initial pre-flight, which it's been our case. When it goes to the board, we like to have that visitation already in place.
I would clarify, when Tiffany brings her proposals to the investment committee, she has done a site visit.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah.
And so in this context, when we're talking about any presentation to an ADA committee, there would be a site visit involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we don't have that in the initial pre-flight, correct, right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we would be making that change.
Yes, because it would change into an underwriting.
Wonderful.
Chair, may I add something? We think this is a very important step in the process, but we are also very cognizant of not wanting to bottleneck, you know, the pipeline and the flow. Because, you know, there's a lot that the board is doing, there's a lot that staff is doing, so we went back and looked at what this process would have done and how many pre-flights would have come to the board since 1997. With the materiality threshold of $10 million, you would have had 13 loans that would have come to the board, totaling $198 million, and then we just did it separately at $8 million, and it increased it to 19 loans for $248 million. So it's not a ton of volume, but as you can see, the underlying value of each one of those loans is quite considerable and has the ability to move that risk tolerance metric that we are the risk tolerance metrics that we're proposing today.
Okay. Let's pause here for the presentation and see if any committee members would like to ask any questions.
I really don't have any questions, but I like the direction this is going. It's things that I've heard the board ask for since I've been here, and I like the direction. And thanks for your work and listening to the board.
Thanks, Mr. Kendi.
So the 2% is of the allocation, not of the outstanding balances of the 500, not of the 4.
That's correct.
Yes. When we make that $500 million allocation, does that set aside that extra, right now, $78 million, so it can't be used for other things. It's specifically dedicated to the administration program.
That is the intent of the allocation.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lamar. Anna, do you have any questions?
I just want thank you, Albert, Anna McKinnon. I would like to have a little bit more discussion on the loan participation program portfolio breakdown by repayment industry. First, I would like to thank staff. I know that at multiple different points in time, this committee has recommended a risk strategy so that we didn't over-concentrate loans in a particular area. So this is welcome, and I understand that it's taken a significant amount of staff time to reach this point, so I applaud the efforts. I just would ask the subcommittee to consider, in our effort to provide space for new loans to be originated, that we are not prioritizing that our willingness to loan money versus the risk to the category. And so I did some initial internet searches looking at industries and how industries might be grouped together. And as an example, the hotel business is very much linked to tourism. And if we combine those two particular items in our portfolio, it reaches 26%, which is above the 25% average. And I would say that that accurately reflects the combination of those two, the risk to our portfolio. And there may be others like that. We've broken out real estate into wide sectors, but real estate may need to be consolidated into one, not be counted as individual percentage points. And so I'm just wondering, as we look at our portfolio and we look at risk specifically of repayment and the real-time experiences that this committee has had through the course of the pandemic, that we know where there were struggles and how these industries are tied together. And I'm just not confident that the breakdown that we see on page 205 should not be rolled up a little bit higher to include or incorporate some of the line items that are listed there. So from my perspective, as a board member, hotel and tourism, as well as restaurants, could be considered affected by particular activities that could risk the portfolio. And then resource development, are we looking at oil and mining together, or we're leaving them on separate lines? From my perspective, when resources, whether it's through advocacy or through decisions that are made at a government level, if they become risks, we might want to put all resource extraction into one category versus separating them out. Those are my comments. Mr. Chairman, I have confidence that that this will go up to the board in a full board meeting and that those discussions will continue. But I do think some of these may need to be combined and that we are risking our portfolio specifically with how much we loan in the area of tourism.
Thank you, Anna. I have a couple questions. Number one, why are we not diversifying the region as well? We have a considerable investments, 39% in Anchorage. And if you add sort of Matsu as the South Central, that increases over 60%. Just in South Central. So I'm wondering why we're not doing the same sort of risk mitigation via location.
To the chair, this is Alan Wessner. We broadly talked about that as a group. Our statutes require us to serve the state of Alaska. And the concentrations for commercial real estate development are obviously in the bigger urban centers that are within the state itself. So you're going to naturally have a concentration that comes in play with Anchorage, Matsuburo, Juneau area, southeast. It would be, in our view, a very difficult process to put in a cap for development that's occurring in Anchorage when that's the prime business area that people may be engaging for an office building or development facility because it's a natural point in the logistics chain within the state itself. So in our view, it didn't really meet the requirements for risk mitigation given our statutory requirement to invest in the state of Alaska itself. If we were broadly looking at and have the capability to invest outside of Alaska, we would then take a broader regional basis, my personal view.
Thank you. So when we're starting to reach our caps, say 500 million or each industry cap, are we going to work with the banks to say, well, we'll take a lower percentage of the loan, instead of, our typical 90%?
To the chair, that is absolutely one of the ways that we can evaluate the risk mitigation. The principal point, which was the initiation of the conversations with this committee, is how do we set those caps? And that is definitely one of the levers that we have in place to meet the conditions that Tiffany was talking about when something becomes a conditional approval because we've exceeded that cap. Okay. One of the other ways of addressing that is then ultimately it becomes an exception, right? If there is a significant level of development, and we are the state's economic development agency, if on a broad base, a bank, and we'll see it in the pre-flight, and this is also one of the reasons why the pre-flight is an element of this risk stages, is for the larger investments, it becomes in that broader discussion when there is that concentration, as Board Member McKinnon highlighted. Address one of the points that Board Member McKinnon highlighted. The driver on combining some of the concentrations is what you see when we identify the top five industry sectors and the limit that we have in place. So it does get caught, and what we're trying to do is underlying that, have a very specific discussion about the repayment profile. Given the example, in our evaluation, hotels do rely upon tourism broadly, but it's a different risk category from a shop owner that is basically waiting for cruise ship, tourists ultimately to depart and purchase items at their individual shops in that case. So we're trying to make the distinction of those that are relying upon tourism traffic and those that actually have a broader business that could be involved in convention that are established here at the state, other things that through the year bring occupancy to a hotel development. Just to clarify from that point, and then the broader point ultimately being that the top five industries just get caught in the concentration. And so, again, to address the point is when we hit those points, one of those specific levers, Chair, is what percentage do we actually undertake in that loan because of our concentrations overall.
Yeah, Board Member McKinnon, I would just to kind of reemphasize what Executive Director Weissman was saying. If you look at the breakdown on the diagram under top five industry concentrations, you can see based on how we're proposing this on a $500 million allocation, tourism is included there, and we're with the top five, we're at 43.46%. So, we have to be pretty directed on additional loan participations that come in order to make sure we're within these guidelines of the top five under 50, which would directly, which directly affects these five industries, most importantly, hotel and tourism.
Just doing some quick math, where are we at with the top five industries?
Chair, that is on the chart. That's
what I was
43%.
43.86.
Right here.
And for the public listening, this is on page, this is the attachment of the table, and if you look on the third green square under loan participation, capital allocation, risk metrics at $500 million, you see the top five industry concentration aggregates to 43.5%.
Maybe if you could walk the public through this diagram that you put together.
Absolutely. So if you, for the public, do we have a patient number on the phone? It's a flow chart that starts at the very top. It's an illustration of the recommended risk policy for the loan participation program. And the flow chart starts with the recommended loan participation capital allocation of $500 million. And then it then goes down into the risk metric proposals that we have discussed today, which you know also include our stringent and procedural-based underwriting procedures that Tiffany and her group administer enhance on a daily basis. So as we go through, you look at borrower concentration, the lesser of $25 million or 5% of the loan participation capital portfolio. The next one would be industry concentration, shall be limited to 25% or less of the loan participation capital allocation. Top five industry, again, limited to 50% or less. And then the pre-flight management screen, which would be any pre-flight that that came in that was in excess of 2% of the loan participation capital allocation, would then go into its next process, which is defined by the light green flowchart portion of the page. So as you can see, our borrower concentration at this point is limited to 3.6% of the $500 million. Our largest industry concentration based on the $500 million is 11.5%, which is represented by the hotel industry. The top five industry concentration is broken out by hotel at 11.49%, tourism at 9.98%, healthcare at 8.44%, real estate mixed use 7.06%, and government 6.5% to add up to 43.46%, which is less than the 50%. And then the pre-flight management screen. And we did this anecdotally and saw that if we put the 2% materiality threshold, it would equate to $10 million on the $500 million. And since 1997, there would have been 13 loans that would have required this additional step for a total loan value of $198.4
million. I just wanted to do a point of clarification as well to Board Member McKinn's comment on the restaurant. So when I went through and recategorized the portfolio, I took out any of those things which materially relied upon tourism income, visitor industry income to survive. So there are restaurants in that tourism category. However, the restaurants that are in the just sole restaurant category are more hometown, local kind of joints where they don't rely on the visitor industry to make that payment.
So you have reclassified. Okay.
Yeah, so restaurant is not just solely restaurants. Tourism is a broad category of many different types of businesses, but the one fact that they have in common is that they need the visitor industry to survive.
Thank you.
Tiffany and her team have, over the last few months, really been going through each and every loan in their classification to come up with the numbers we're able to discuss today.
Thank you. One other point that I have on page 3 of 5, and it's under number 4. I believe that it should say in section C there, all loans greater than or equal to a cumulative of $3 million. That's the language we have been using in the Budget Audit Subcommittee for loan modifications. And so you may have a borrower that comes for an additional $3 million, but their cumulative might be above $5 million. Is that language that we want to add into that?
The language that is on page 3 of 5 is the language of the policy we have in place for the level of approvals. So the change really was, in this case, was with the modifications. Was an aggregate to $3 million was the decision at that point because of the volume of the modifications. We're not proposing to change at this point in time. The review process has been in place that doesn't require a modification.
But with risk mitigation, if there is a borrower that is above the risk level, cumulatively, shouldn't we be reviewing that as well?
That is what's captured with the $5 million in aggregate exposure.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. And then, what is our current interest rate? Have they risen recently due to the interest rate rises? What is our current interest rate?
As of last week, our 20-year was at 4.16 and our 25 was 4.19.
Okay.
And our floor, just so in anticipation of this, we do have what has been the last couple of years that we've been quoting at our floor rate. So the reference index rates have been below the floor. The floor rate was set at 3.55% this past year. We're going to be resetting that rate coming up middle of April. And the anticipation is that that floor is going to marginally increase to about 3.75, 3.8%. But that is a projection at this stage. We'll set that ultimately by April 15th.
And Alan, are we sure that that is our true cost of capital, the 3.55%?
Chair, you ask a difficult question to answer. ADA source of funds, you know, normally our cost of funds is based upon what your borrowing costs are. You will be actively engaged in the capital markets, and we have measured that directly, as well as with our accumulated net equity position and what that alternative investment rate is. Because we do not have external borrowed capital, which is good from a conservative side, but as a financial authority, we have broadly stated as a staff position that we believe we should have access to capital markets. That is complicated by actions of appropriation on our capital, which has limited and increased the cost of us accessing capital. So we have chosen to not do that at this stage and rely upon our net equity position and those external investments. So based upon that decision, yes, it is our cost of capital, what we're referencing. However, it's not, and I would say this statement, and to be adjusted by any comments from our staff as well that is jointly discussing this point, I don't think it optimally represents our cost of capital. And what I would add is one of the elements that this has been a very good process with the BAS and establishing risk mitigation is because, as you know, we have been looking at ways of recapitalizing the loan participation portfolio by accessing external capital markets. One of the first steps we would have to do is be able to define for those potential purchasers of those cash flow streams exactly what the risk position is of that portfolio and have identified risk mitigation policy. So this is one positive step moving us towards getting external capital for that program.
Yeah. Do we still have our rates tied to the remind me about
Federal
that.
Home Loan Bank.
Is this the Federal Home Loan Bank?
We have two references. We have the loan participation program by regulation indexes to the Des Moines Federal Home Loan Bank 20-year, 25-year quoted rates. That is what Tiffany just highlighted. Now, regulatory provisions, we add on that a cost of service.
Right.
That gets calculated annually within ADA. And that was most recently established at 61 basis points, 62 basis points?
The last time we recalculated was right at 60 basis points, and then we'll have a new calculation coming up.
Right. So we recalculate that how often?
We do that annually, and then it gets quoted into our rates, and that gets then set for the year. We, with the last years with COVID, have been taking a very close look at ultimately what our cost of service has been, and that's actually been adjusted upwards in the last couple of years to accurately reflect the time and effort that's taken in administering the program.
What was the cost of service pre-COVID?
It was estimated, if I recall correctly, on the level of 32, 35 basis points.
That is correct. That is what that's just what I saw in the calculations as it being represented. But there was no reconciliation of that.
Wait, hold one second. Anna has a question for Board Member McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Board Member McKinnon here. This is not in line. I can hold until you finish this line of conversation, or would you like me to ask now?
Do you want to finish your line of thought process?
I was just going to finish very quickly by saying that the floor rate itself references our alternative cost of capital, and that's the reference to our internal and externally managed net equity position. And that in itself is a five-year average of the return on that portfolio. That's why the floor rate is set at a different index than ultimately what we're generally referencing for the loans itself.
Thank you, Alan. Board Member McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Board Member McKinnon here. I have a question on the $25 million cap in the overall policy. Please refresh my memory. Is that a statutory cap or one that ADA has adopted internally? That's the first question. And then the follow-up to that is there an industry standard? Even though we don't compete with banks, I know that but at least I have looked with interest as the portfolio changes, whether there is an industry standard.
Through the Chair, Board Member McKinnon, that is a statutory requirement, the $25 million. Now, initially it was set at $10 million previously, and it has been increased by the legislature to reflect the program and the type of development that the programs needed in ultimately supporting local financial institutions. The if you could please remind me of your second question.
So we've set in statute. The second question is there an industry standard for lenders in general on the amount that is capped? I understand the legislature has set the cap, and I'm wondering whether it's the right number or whether it should be more restrictive based on risk.
I would ask that Tiffany Jansen, with your background and with local financial institutions, if you would respond on that.
Yes, thank you. Tiffany Jansen, Commercial Finance Director. Typically, the industry standard, and one that I have seen personally in the Alaska financial institutions, is 15% of their capital for unsecured loans to a single borrower, 25% for secured loans. Typically, what you see, again, that's their max. That may not be where their comfort is, but that is the max listed in their policy typically.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up.
Go ahead.
Tiffany, is there an industry standard that concentration with one borrower is limited? And if so, is it limited based on percentages that are secured or not, or overall impact to the bank's financial position or a credit union or whoever that lender might be?
Again, it would be the 15% of their capital, so that number can change, right? It won't be set at a million-dollar number, but it will adjust as their capital adjusts. So that's typically for the unsecured loans. They're taking that from the benchmark standard, and 25% if it's a secured loan. Again, those are standards, not necessarily where their comfort level is.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a comment on the $25 million per se as the statutory structure that we're working under. My comment on the $25 million relates to page 2 of 5, that if there was a single loan in the $25 million category in most of these cases, it might significantly change the concentration for the repayment industry. So the top 5 could move, and maybe that's just an observation. I think staff has done an incredible amount of work here, and I appreciate their work and their proposal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the Chair, Ms. McKinnon, that is a leading factor on the fact that we have upwards statutorily up to $25 million, which could go to any individual loan, and that's generally reflected as 5% of our allocated capital, that it could certainly reach an issue that we are in excess of 50% on the top 5, or individually within a sector create a concentration, which would then be subject to this proposal. It would be what has been highlighted by Tiffany Jansen as a then conditional approval subject to more room or the determination ultimately by the board of adjustments in that policy or as an exception.
Thank you both. My final question is can you just explain to the board members who is sort of, you take in the pre-flight, and then from there you do your underwriting process. Who's involved in that underwriting process for ADA staff? And then on the investment committee, just who is on the investment committee as well and in the process of the investment committee approving or denying a loan?
If I may make a clarification, and I think there may be a slight misunderstanding. There's two processes. We get a pre-flight, which is a heads up by the originating lenders saying, this has been requested of this. Do you think this fits your program? Separately, when they had received a positive result on that pre-flight, it may be months later that they have then put together all the information and they'll come with the full proposal ultimately to Tiffany's group. At that point in time is when they're doing the underwriting. The distinction that we're trying to make with the 2% level is to get ahead of pre-flights that are a large dollar commitment level. To say, at this point in time, we're not going to give you a preliminary indication. We want you to actually come with more definitive information that you would under an underwriting and then have that review at that time. So just want to make a clarification of that. So process-wise, if you could explain that initial pre-flight or let's use an example of a $2 million loan or request.
So for a $2 million pre-flight that would come in, it comes into our commercial finance email, and then that is given by the assistant to me, where I will schedule a meeting with my loan officers, where we'll discuss the pre-flight, ask any questions of the loan officer listed on that pre-flight. Typically, we need some clarification questions, things like that, to better understand it. So if it's under board level, we'll decision it there where we give it what we call a green light if they come back with favorable answers to those questions, and then it gets logged and it's sent back to the officer as a green light. So it can, like Alan was just stating, it can take several months before we would get a loan package. Let's say that loan package comes back a few months later into our commercial finance email, where the first step of the process is our loan assistant will go through it, confirm that we have the documents needed, that we've received the application fee. She will then send it to the director, me, to review it, assign it out to a loan officer. That loan officer will then fully underwrite the file. So at this point, the bank has underwritten the file. Again, they've provided their credit memo, the appraisal, all the pertinent information needed to actually make a full decision on it. The environmental, everything at that point is in that package. So at $2 million, once a loan officer has completely underwritten that, I've reviewed it, edited it, we've answered any questions that need to be done, it has been scheduled for investment committee. So the investment committee is going to be Alan Weitzner, our executive director, Dave Heinze, our chief operations officer, Donna Kepper is our chief financial officer, and Morgan Neff, our chief investment officer. So it's scheduled for them. They get the documents a couple days for investment committee to review them and then come to investment committee with any questions. I present the loan at investment committee, and then a decision is rendered.
And what about a $6 million loan? Can you explain the differences in that process?
Absolutely. So if it's a $6 million loan, back at the pre-flight stage, I would then schedule a meeting with Chief Investment Officer and our Executive Director to go over that. So they can ask whatever questions they need to better understand the pre-flight before we decision that, give it a green light. We'll ask those questions back to loan officers, and then it may be going back and giving them that information. And so if once that's sent back, let's say it's a green light, then once that loan package has come in, it's gone through the whole investment committee level that I discussed earlier, then the investment committee will make the decision on whether or not they want to send it to the board.
So from what Alan was saying, instead of a pre-flight, it's really a total underwriting process before it gets to the investment.
Minus the final valuation environmental, that's correct.
It's always an underwriting process before it gets to any ADA committee.
Yeah.
And what I would highlight with some of the discussions that Tiffany has, it's really, Tiffany's already taken a look at that pre-flight. She's raised some particular questions. It's more of a discussion of what is it that we are concerned about that we want to give a heads up ultimately to the originating bank. In large cases, it's trying to get ahead of issues like the environmental review. And that's been a large element of the conversation at the board level with different loan participations when it comes there. It's trying to be consistent, giving that same feedback, and really highlighting to the individual loan officers as they're reaching out what other elements we would like to see them do for them to have a full package and for us to really be able to evaluate it.
Thank you. And I'm just assuming that you have a document for each, for a loan under $3 million, a loan over $5 million, that you have a sheet ready for the loan officers in the community that this is what's required for the underwriting process?
We have a checklist.
Okay.
Yeah. And our environmental procedure is also on our website now as well. So we're trying to eliminate, again, any surprises, that everyone's aware of what we require, what the process is, and try to be as transparent as possible with that.
Well, I hope everyone has been informed by this meeting today. I asked Alan to go into more depth since we did have some new board committee members on the committee. So that's why I've been asking some of the questions that I have, hopefully to get more answers for our new board members and for the public. I'll make one final request. If you have any questions, go ahead and ask them now. If not, I think we'll take a vote to refer this to the board. Bill, Kendi, any questions for staff?
No questions.
Mr. Bidmore?
I did have one question on the participation, 90%. What would be the overall of the $422 million? Do we see much less than that 90%, or do most of the loans come through at the full 90?
The $422 million portfolio represents the historical accrual into that. So I would say on a large part, and I don't have the full number, and we can get the average participation level and provide that to the board. I don't have it in front of me right now, but we will follow up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say roughly it is in excess of 85% on average.
The maximum is 90.
Maximum is 90. Now, we do have some fairly large loans that have been done at a little over 50% participation. It really depends upon the underlying collateral and decision at that point. One of the elements that we have communicated with the originating lenders is that we are taking a closer look at the level of participation. And in some cases where, depending upon the state of the building that's being financed, or if it's coming directly out of construction, we may want to see a higher participation that's coming from the originating lender, but there's closer affiliation on their interests and our interests in that particular loan.
Thank you.
I would say this. Definitely in the last year or so, we have looked at those loans coming in on a case-by-case basis and looked to see if that level of participation needs to be adjusted. And in some cases, we have, or it's warranted it.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Board Member McKinnon, any further questions? Shaking her head no. All right. I'll look for a motion to move this risk management policy to the full board for the April board meeting.
This is Bill. So moved.
Board Member Bidmore, second.
All right. I'm just going to go, if there are any objections, please state your name and now. I don't see any objections. The risk management policy has been forwarded to the board for approval. That's our last item under six. Moving on to item number seven, board member comments. I'll start with Board Member McKinnon. No comments. Mr. Bidmore?
Nothing to add, thanks.
Nothing to add.
All right. I just want to welcome our new committee member, Bill. I don't know how long you're going to stay with us since you're now vice chair, but I think Mr. Bibblemore, welcome to the Budget and Audit Subcommittee. And Anna, thank you for being on this committee and appreciate all the input that you have given to this committee and staff over the past year plus and helping us through the loan modification and COVID time period. Your involvement has just been well needed, so thank you. And again, thank you for staff for putting this together. This has been echoed by some of the committee members here that we have asked for this mitigation policy for some time now, and now